And welcome, you're listening to the Forecast F1 podcast, recording right after the Grand Prix of Bahrain. And I'm here with Sam. Sam, how did you enjoy that weekend?
Well, I enjoyed it very much, as I usually do. So I think it was a fantastic weekend and exciting qualifying and a pretty great race with some nice overtakes. So looking forward to, as we always say, to talk about it.
I was going to say we can get back to saying that there's a lot to talk about, because I do think this weekend was one of those. We're not with the other host this time, Savannah, unfortunately, the recording times with all of our time zones are not always as convenient. But we have another guest, first time on the podcast, Nacho. Nacho, welcome.
Hello, how are you? So happy to be here. And yes, Sam said it's a lot of things to talk about in this podcast for this race, for the qualifying and the actual race, more than Japan, I believe. So, yeah, as a Spanish fan, also a little bit disappointed, but it is what it is.
Well, I mean, I guess then you were waiting for the 33rd win of Alonso, or?
I've been waiting that my whole life, but, you never lose hope.
So yeah, just to give a small introduction, you already mentioned there you're Spanish, you're living in the US actually, and you're the creator of among some of our fans, a pretty well-known Instagram channel of Faust Nacho F1, mm-hmm. And I believe, do you also do TikTok?
Yeah, I do TikTok, I do YouTube Shorts as well. My content is most about memes, about how to engage new people to F1, do memes or jump some news. And also I'm I started that account as the Mama Mazepin creator, so if I think you've heard that song before, so yeah, I'm the creator of that song.
I definitely have.
Very neat.
And actually
cool.
It's also your sub league in Forecast is also called that, Mama Mazepin. And mm-hmm. Actually you've created already quite a big following, and there's quite a lot of people that are in your group and are competing for being on top of that. But we're going to get to those scores a little bit later on. And actually, I think through you, there's a lot of Spanish people actually that joined Forecast. So mm-hmm. That's a great collaboration, but we're going to get to some of that later on when we go through the scores. I think it's time to first talk a little bit about, Sam said, it was an interesting qualifying session, interesting race. Talking a little bit about the track that we're at. Of course, we're very much used to having Bahrain on the calendar as the first race of the season. Now, we all know we went to Australia first this year, so it's actually quite revitalizing for me that, you know, usually having tests at Bahrain and then Bahrain also being the first race, you know, when you go to the practice sessions, it's like, yeah, we've seen all of this. It was quite refreshing that now we've had three other Grand Prix beforehand and we already have somewhat of an idea of how the teams line up. But then actually, Bahrain is quite a different circuit to the other three that we've had, I think, especially because of tire degradation. And I think it was, like you mentioned, Nacho, it was good that after Japan we had a race where we all knew that it was very likely we were going to have a two-stopper, which does bring some extra parameters to the race, because I think we were all ready for seeing something slightly different than what we saw in Japan. So let's go to qualifying. Sam, what were the main takeaways, the main highlights for you from that Saturday?
Wow. Well, there was, I would say that qualifying was, in my opinion, one of the most exciting qualifyings we've seen so far this year. So there was quite a few takeaways that I would say. First immediate one is obviously the pole position for Oscar Piastri. I mean, he's just put on quite a lap and was able to do that. And I think also a little bit of a resurgence, we can say, from Ferrari. This season hasn't been so kind to them in some respects, but to see Leclerc come out and be able to manage to secure the third, which eventually became the second spot as a result of Russell dropping slightly. But I think that was something that was really great to see. But ultimately, the most notable I would say results or surprising results would be, the first one that comes immediate to mind would be Gasly in the Alpine. I mean, straight through Q1, Q2, Q3, the strength of him as a driver on the track was quite impressive. And it, to be honest, it was unexpected for me. I did not expect to see him up there on the timesheets the way that he was. Nacho, what did you think about that when it came to Alpine, and specifically, I would even mention the fact of Jack, because he had some really great, he was doing quite well during qualifying as well.
Yeah, I mean, what I think about Alpine is that I expected just one car in qualifying, as we said and as we saw in the previous races, Gasly in front of Doohan by a lot. But it was surprising for Doohan as well after his crash in Japan that he qualified 11th, that he made it to Q2, barely passing to Q3. And also, Gasly was impressive, not only in the race that we will talk later, but also in qualifying. I thought it was only, you know, like just one thing that you see, like for the whole season, seeing like a, you know, an Alpine fifth position. So you're like, oh, maybe he will drop at the end of the, you know, the last chance, the last lap of Q3. People will improve, but no, he performed well. I think he overperformed that car, that Alpine. So that was very impressive. And also another takeaway, it would be Piastri, but also Norris. We saw a Lando Norris kind of hesitating in Japan with Max Verstappen when it was like a 1v1 head-to-head there. And now when it comes to make a perfect lap, we know that Piastri can do it, but we haven't seen Norris yet. So that was a big underperform from the driver from McLaren.
Yeah, I suppose it was the biggest surprise for Alpine was for you. I saw you released a video a couple of days ago of Alpine no tiene ritmo.
Yeah, but, another song.
Yeah, they came back pretty strong. Yeah, what I would also say is that I was surprised with, you know, after Japan, where I wouldn't say that Red Bull was dominant, but of course they did win the race. It seemed they had a lot of issues even making it into Q3. In the first Q session we had Verstappen, where there was even doubts if he would go through because of track limits. And yeah, in the end, actually, first time that the other Red Bull car also makes it into Q3. So good job on Tsunoda there. Even though he qualified 10th, he had a lot of he didn't have such a fast lap in that. He even had a faster lap in Q2 than he did in Q3. But yeah, they really struggled. And yeah, I think another, you know, after summarizing this qualifying session, I think what we all felt was somewhat bad decision making, bad monitoring of the FIA, saying only after Q3 had finished and everything had been set, we heard that the lap of Hülkenberg was actually not should not have stood, because it was he actually went beyond track limits, and actually Albon therefore should have made it into Q2, but didn't, because they only found out 45 minutes later.
Yeah, that was definitely disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely disappointing, and I don't know how, like, all the technologies that the F1 has right now nowadays, like, how can you realize that the driver has done like a track limit 45 minutes later, that, you know, because you're punishing Albon, you're punishing you know, Albon or maybe Lawson, that could have improved Albon's time as well, you know. Albon was a potential Q3 driver, so I think that was like a little bit disappointing. Not for Hülkenberg, but also for the FIA. I think they didn't manage it well. Also in the race, those penalties that some drivers received during the race and also after the race, things that we will talk after. But yeah, also for qualifying, I would say that Carlos Sainz made a big improvement from the previous races, previous qualifyings. First qualifying that he outperforms Albon, and I think he's kind of, you know, getting to know that Williams better, and he's driving it as he should.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, no, definitely. I thought that was a very good result of Sainz, even qualifying ahead of Hamilton, who he would meet later on in the race as well. But yeah, no, I think Sainz needed a couple of races to, you know, really get to know that Williams. But it's going to be interesting from now on because, like you said, you know, this is the first time that he really, well, I don't want to say necessarily outperformed Albon, but yeah, he had a better weekend altogether, even though he didn't even manage to finish during the race. But from this point onward, it's going to be very, very interesting to see between the two of them because I think, as we talked about during the previous podcast of this season, I think Albon has actually surprised quite a lot of people by actually, you know, setting some pretty decent results in the first few races, but. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and well, I think there's going to be a lot of other inter-team battles that from this point onward are going to be very interesting. For example, the one in Haas also, I find this is really an interesting development as well. We were talking about that when was it? I think in Japan as well, where Bearman finished in the points, Ocon didn't, and yeah, again this weekend. It was, of course, Bearman that didn't really perform during qualifying. Unfortunately, he finished last, but in the race would work all the way up to getting even into the points. But I guess I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. But let's go into the race and talk a little bit about that. And let's begin at the very beginning, Sam. And I guess. Well, take it away regarding the start. What did you make of that? That was very interesting. And yeah, what we have not mentioned or we touched upon it slightly was that the Mercedes drivers did indeed get that one grid spot penalty. So it was actually Leclerc starting ahead of Russell, but that didn't take very long in that first corner. Although actually Leclerc and Hamilton started on a slightly alternative strategy as well.
Yes. But I would say the first thing when it comes to the initial start of the race would be two things for Lando. One that was absolutely fantastic and one that wasn't so much. His start was a fantastic start. I mean, he really had a great start. And we know that typically he struggles with that a little bit. So to see him come out and be able to elevate himself the way that he did and really find a great line to take advantage of was fantastic. However, of course, there was the disappointment because in that he did receive a 5-second penalty for a false start, and that dropped him. I believe it dropped him quite a bit in the initial bit. And I mean, it was an unfortunate thing because it was such a small difference where he just rolled. And I think it was actually, if I can go back and double check, one of the main issues for him was that he basically, hold on, give me one sec, because I'm just going to where it is. So Anton, make note of this to edit. Perfect. So yeah, just to elaborate, when it came to the false start, he triggered the anti-stall system, and that caused the car briefly to jump ahead, just enough to give him the 5-second penalty result. So, I mean, if the shoe was, if things were a little bit different, if that didn't take place, he may have been in maybe a little bit higher of a podium. But at the same time, I think that overall, I mean, I might be, like you said before, jumping a little bit ahead, but I think it was still a decent recovery and result for Lando, considering the fact of what took place in the initial beginning of the race and the 5-second penalty he received. I would also say that, you know, there was a couple of really exciting things, and you did mention Bearman, and I mean, in my opinion, I would have had him as driver of the day today for the race because he started in 20th and he managed to finish in 10th, and I think that was an absolutely incredible result. Since we were talking about the driver dynamic of Haas, I really agree with you, Anton, when it comes to that's one of the driver dynamics I'm so excited to see continue to unfold, because the fact that Behrmann is really putting in some solid results over the last two races, and not to discredit Esteban Ocon as well, because for him, ultimately, he finished eighth, and he had a fantastic race, a quiet one, I would say, because there wasn't a lot of attention towards that. But for both drivers, I think ultimately it was a great weekend for Haas when it came to points. There were a few other great things about the race too, but I'd like to hear a little bit of everyone's thoughts here on that. Nacho, what were some memorable moments that you took out of the race?
Obviously the start. I think Norris made one of his best starts ever. Unluckily, he jumped it before, as you said. I liked when the TV, the F1 TV showed the onboard of Max Verstappen, just looking to his right, checking that Lando Norris was in a off position, while the lights were off, like they were red. And that's how incredible Max is, like just looking the surroundings instead of looking off what he needs to see, you know. So it was kind of like snitching over there. He snitched a little bit, and I liked it because, you know, that means that he cares about that, and it was like not a poor mistake from Norris, but, you know, those things can happen. I remember that happened to Fernando Alonso in Saudi Arabia in 2023, I believe, or so, with Aston Martin. And
right. Good memory.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, everything that happens to Fernando Alonso, I have a good memory. Lucky or unlucky. But those things can happen, and it's okay. But it was a good start from Norris, a good defending by Piastri on the first lap as well, first corners. Also, Carlos Sainz got like a couple of places. I think he overtook, I think it was Antonelli, I believe, that he overtook as well. It was a really good start from Carlos Sainz, and also from Ollie Behrmann. He was 14th in the first lap. That was really impressive for him in his F1 debut season, and he managed to finish on points. I don't think it would be like a discussion, right? If it's deserved or not, because maybe Carlos Sainz deserved to finish on points if nothing happened with Yuki Tsunoda. But apart from that, good race from Ollie Behrmann, also for Esteban Ocon, that he was a little bit unlucky with Max Verstappen when the safety car came up. And because he just pitted, I believe, and he had to change, you know, the strategy again. But he was good defending with Max Verstappen, and also Gasly was like, you know, those quiet races that nobody sees, that nobody cares, but he still finishes P7, first points for Alpine, and yeah, good race overall that we'll talk now.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that now all of the teams have scored points, and that didn't take very long. It could have been even a lot earlier. And actually, Alpine altogether just had a very good weekend. And you touched upon Doohan earlier, Sam. I also thought that he had not only did he qualify 11th, but he also had a decent race. I mean, going for that earlier pit stop, it seemed that was a very good move. It looked like everyone who went for that undercut had a bit of an advantage earlier on in the race. And unfortunately, you know, in the end, he couldn't make it count. He even still got a 5-second penalty as well for track limits. So he was classified as P15. But Gasly fortunately did manage to bring home points for Alpine. So it's very nice to see that all teams have already scored points. Although looking at Sauber, I kind of doubt whether they're gonna score very soon. Although actually Hülkenberg finished, it was 13th, I think. So not too bad after all. You touched upon Sainz there, Nacho. I wanted to go into that a little bit and his battling with Tsunoda, and then later on his penalty, which was not for that battle with Tsunoda. He got a 10-second penalty, and also 2 points on his license for him pushing off Antonelli. I don't think I've either missed that part or they didn't show it, but I'm not really sure what happened there. But I was surprised that that there was no penalty for Tsunoda hitting Sainz there. I mean, we could obviously see that the damage was there. Lawson, for instance, did get penalized for, you know, similar touch on, I think it was Hülkenberg, who did not even have any damage, although I understand that, you know, we're not judging things by the end result, we're not judging it by the damage, but I think both situations were somewhat similar. And that was, I don't know, it was very unfortunate because Sainz could have definitely brought home some points there, and that way he didn't. And I guess it was also from that incident where there was some carbon on the track, which it surprised me that we got an actual safety car, not a virtual one. I guess for the whole rhythm and dynamic of the race, that was quite nice somewhat. I mean, of course, it always it's an advantage to some drivers and it's a disadvantage to others. I mean, the ones that had already pitted, for instance, Antonelli, but also even a couple of other ones. I think Ocon also already pitted. Gasly and Doohan both pitted. So everybody who went for their early second pit stop was at a disadvantage there. And that was something that I think even Antonelli, when that safety car came on track, he went to change because he went on to softs and he went to put on different set of softs even during that safety car. So but I was surprised that it was a safety car. I would have expected it could have been done with a virtual safety car, although I'm not the biggest fan of virtual safety cars, so maybe I shouldn't complain.
No, but I agree. I thought it was a little questionable when I saw the virtual safety car. See, now I've completely confused myself. But when the safety car was enabled, I was a little confused by that as well, because my initial thought was, oh, what's happened? And then I'm looking at the timesheets. I don't see any adjustment with the driver standing. So I then thought to myself, is it really because of the debris on the track? So I was quite surprised by that call. However, like you said, obviously some teams and drivers were able to benefit from that, definitely. I would say one of the really fantastic things that we're seeing this season is the consistency as well, and we saw this in the race, of George Russell. And like, he has been really on point for the most part this season. It's quite impressive, because when you actually go to the Constructor Championship currently, Mercedes is number two right now. They are second in the Constructors' Championship, and a large reason of that is because of Russell. I mean, the podiums that he's managed to secure, and he did secure second today on the podium. And I mean, to be able to go through a race where he clearly faced multiple technical issues, there was no doubt about that. He was also questioning the tire strategy that they had shortly right before that safety car was enabled. I think he had several things going on. The timing data was incorrect. He had some sort of a failure with the DRS system, and yet he still managed, and he also had to fend off Lando in the last several laps, which I think he did a really great job defensively doing that. So I thought it was a fantastic performance from George this weekend. Even during qualifying, he put on a flyer of a lap. So overall, very impressed with Russell this weekend, and map it out to this year so far. I think he has really, really been trying to take and extract everything that he can out of that Mercedes to just maximize the points. And you're seeing that. You're seeing that result.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Russell outperformed his car and everything during qualifying, when he put, I think it was more than a tenth from Antonelli, that he was P1 till Piastri made that lap. I actually thought Mercedes were gonna made it to pole position, at least George Russell, maybe P1, P3 was good. But overall, yeah, like during the race, we saw a George Russell that, Mr. Consistency, it's called right now. So I think he deserved that name. You can see, like, he's fourth in the championships. He's also carrying that Mercedes Constructor championship as well. And yeah, the last laps, I thought, actually, if I'm honest, I thought he was gonna go into box and just retire of the race, because I remember him saying, "I hope the steering wheel doesn't fall off or something like that," because he was like having a lot of issues with the dashboard and everything. So I thought that maybe he was gonna lose a lot of time. He actually did, but he managed to cover from Lando Norris with good defending. He also recognized that Norris was struggling with Leclerc, so he kind of took care of look after those tires and managed them, because I didn't know he was gonna make it till the end with those soft, but he managed it well. He knew his race, that was not fighting for the race with Piastri. He knew the maximum position was second, so he managed to do that, and he actually deserved it. Yeah. Yeah, and also the safety car. I'm a big fan of safety cars, but I think for this one, I don't think that was a good point of having a safety car in the race. Kinda killed the Ferrari strategy till the end. I was looking forward seeing Ferrari with those soft tires at the end of the last stint, seeing Hamilton and Leclerc trying to push and fight for those podium places. So I think, I don't know, yeah, a safety car is something that we begged on the Japan Grand Prix, but now in Bahrain, I don't think it was really good. I was waiting for maybe a virtual when those carbon fibers from Carlos Sainz fell, but yeah, I think Carlos Sainz also with that little incident with Yuki Tsunoda, I thought Yuki was gonna get penalized for the outcome. We know that they don't judge for the outcome, but the damage was there, you know, and I think it was 50 points of aerodynamics that Carlos Sainz lost in that incident. So I think Yuki deserved a little bit of penalty on there, but you know, it's what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. He didn't get it. Actually, you mentioned there a fight you wanted to see between Leclerc and Hamilton, but we had a very decent fight between Leclerc, Hamilton and Norris at some point in the race, which was exhilarating. I really thought that actually Norris was going to overtake Leclerc, but then Leclerc managed to keep Norris behind, and Hamilton made use of the moment and overtook Norris. And I thought that was a great battle. I want to go back and look at that again, but all in all, yeah, the two of you described very well the battle that we saw in front. I actually, you know, looking back at Norris, his 5 second penalty that he served in the pits for that wrong positioning or false start, I think that would have made a difference, and that would have gotten him past Russell if he wouldn't have had that penalty. So I mean, in the end, I'm glad for it, because I think that we can conclude, especially also seeing this, and I'm not saying that Bahrain is that representative of all the rest of the races we're going to see on the calendar, but then again, it showed that the McLarens are quite fast and also quite good with tire degradation, and I think that it would have been a pretty easy 1-2 for McLaren hadn't Norris had a little bit more stronger qualifying, which he didn't, or if he wouldn't have had that time penalty, I think it would have been a McLaren 1-2. And at this point, I think what we need to hope for is that, you know, we're going to see a battle at least between those two drivers of McLaren and Piastri winning and Norris not finishing second, albeit third. You know, that creates a slight point advantage after this. Piastri gets back at the point advantage that Norris had by a little bit. So, you know, that's going to be, I think, the main a thing to watch for the rest of the season. I don't want to write off the season already for, you know, others. I mean, of course, we were talking about it previously. Things might, you know, turn around quite dramatically, especially with some of the wing rules also going to be changed after Barcelona or during Barcelona. So that's going to be very interesting to see what effect that has. But thus far, it looks like the McLarens are very, very strong. And I'm happy that at least George Russell was able to fight that off a little bit. But I was getting quite frustrated. We've seen with the new timing sheets at the first two Grand Prix that there was a lot of trouble with showing the timing sheets even during during qualifying and during the race. So, you know, when they went into this chaotic, I mean, we at some point, I think it dropped off after, because Russell, I guess his tracker was not working right. So we saw that Russell was P20. I think it was during the safety car, after the restart of the safety car. And then they took it away altogether. And that was, I don't know, that kind of, it's like watching, you know, something, but yeah, not having the information that you want to see. And I guess that's also what created the issues with the DRS, I guess, because of the tracker not working on Russell. The other cars also couldn't track where that car was, so they couldn't. That's why also Norris was told on the radio that to only use the DRS if he was 100% certain that he would be within that 1 second of Russell, because there was no other way for it to be digitally monitored. And I was glad to, you know, it was one of these things again, and we've seen it time and time again, that, you know, after the race is finished, we're not 100% sure what the result is going to be, because we don't know who is going to get disqualified or get a time penalty. And of course, that's all part of Formula One. I mean, I perfectly well understand that. And actually, it was Nico Hülkenberg who got disqualified also for his plank, where his plank was not within the required range. So, you know, these are things that that happened. But I was glad actually to see Russell, not only for that fight between the two McLarens, but I think that in this case, it seemed to me that the FIA, or at least Formula One, you know, it was not all on Russell's account, and having to switch to this manual operation of DRS. To me it seemed that there was more wrong than just Russell making a mistake. So I was very happy that he didn't get penalized for opening his DRS flap, because he did open it, or it opened. Russell himself mentioned after the race in his interview that it happened because he pressed the radio button and then the DRS flap opened, and he closed it immediately again. And I believe that he didn't really get an advantage. In his words, he even had a disadvantage because he went on the brakes. But glad to see that he did not get a penalty. And of course, you know, with forecast results, I was already waiting for that to happen. I was already calculating that alternative scenario of Russell getting a 5 second penalty, and with that, because both Norris and Leclerc were within 5 seconds of him, so he would have actually finished fourth if he would have gotten a 5 second penalty. I had already calculated those alternative results, but glad enough that I didn't need to release those, but we could stick with the original ones.
Yeah, how my points yet again this weekend would have changed considerably had that penalty, as for many, but in a positive way, had that penalty happened. But I mean, nonetheless, I still think that it was a deserved result for Russell to end up with second. And just one quick thing that I'll mention, just to add a little bit more into when you bring up McLaren and the driver pairings there. We've touched on this in the last episode as well, and I think that you're seeing, I often wonder when it comes to these situations. I think that this season in particular, with the consistency that with McLaren and the pace and the car itself overall, the tire degradation that you've mentioned, Anton, I think this is the year where you're going to see the most pressure upon both these drivers in terms of competing against each other, because they are in a position right now from the start of the season where they are the fastest car on the track. So it starts to really boil down to a mental game in some respects. And I feel like I can't help but wonder over this weekend, and even previously during Suzuka, there were a few incidents with Norris where just a few slip-ups, and yet Piastri has been pretty consistent, and we're seeing that in the result. So as we get deeper into the season itself, I'm really interested to see how this continues to unfold, because I mean, both drivers, there's no doubt about their capabilities and their skills. I mean, they are one of the strongest driver pairings on the grid, but with the unique position that they are in, being in a situation where McLaren doesn't necessarily favor one driver or the other, and previously and historically as a result of that, they've sometimes struggled with their strategical decisions as of last year, that have kind of added a little bit more of let's say, tense situations that we at least can see from our behind a screen when it comes to that driver pairing. So I'm going to find it quite fascinating to continue to see this unfold. I mean, this could have been a race that could have been a lot more different, like you mentioned, and had, let's say, Norris nailed his final lap during Q3, and let's say it was the two drivers instead of Russell being there, how much more pressure would have been on the team itself to ultimately see where that result goes. And I think we're gonna, in terms of who's topping the podium, I think we're definitely going to see a few races that are going to apply more pressure when that happens. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. But overall, a fantastic result for Piastri. And another interesting thing, actually, when it comes to his win this weekend, I'm not sure if anyone knows, but this was, he actually became the first McLaren driver to win in Bahrain since the race's inception. So that's an interesting little fun fact that I was able to discover. But
yeah, that's a great point. Like, I also saw, but I saw it after the race, that McLaren hasn't won yet in Bahrain. They finally did, and it was Oscar Piastri. And yeah, talking about the McLaren fight between one another, I would say that the only team that can make McLaren lose the championship, I think it's McLaren. You know, it's they can be in the, I don't think they will be in the 2007 situation, because I don't think Norris and Piastri are Hamilton and Alonso in those mental, that mentality in that environment. I think Zak Brown can manage that properly and as he should. But as far as we saw in the first four races, I would say Piastri is a great contender for the title, and I don't think Norris is prepared yet. That's my thoughts. I don't know if I put so much pressure on Norris, or I look like a lot to Norris and every single thing he does, like I make a point. But I think Piastri has shown more composure and more anger, you know, like he's more competitive in those things. Norris is kind of, you know, hesitating in 1v1s. I think once he knew the penalty for his jump start, I think he should have overtaken Russell easily, I believe. He was in a DRS zone, and he could have done it easily, and he could have made like a big gap for him after his pit stop, after his penalty, to go like a little bit farther position. So I think McLaren, it's not that they lost like a 1-2 here in Bahrain, but definitely Norris could have made it very much easier, that overcome that he did at the end.
I do agree with you that it's, regardless of, I mentioned that, you know, Norris had that 5-second penalty and without that he would have overtaken Russell, but I was still surprised that he didn't. So it's a good point that it seems that whenever Norris is under a lot of pressure, because, you know, if you look at last season and you compare the two, I mean, Norris was easily the better qualifier between Norris and Piastri. I think it was 4-20 or 6-18, something like this. So yeah, I think Norris in that respect is the more, well, obviously the more experienced, but also perhaps the better qualifier, if you take away the pressure part. But that's the big thing, you know, whenever drivers, and you were referring to 2007 with Hamilton and Alonso, and, you know, these type of situations is also, and I guess same with, we've seen it over and over again, you know, of course, when there's a obvious first driver, like, you know, what Ferrari had for years with Schumacher and his second driver. But whenever you get to the situation that both seem to have a chance to really win the championship, we've seen it with Rosberg and Hamilton, but we've seen it also with Weber and Vettel, and yeah, Hamilton, Alonso, you know, it brings this extra little bit of pressure that drivers just cope with in different ways. And it seems indeed that Piastri is someone that stays very, very calm. We've seen that during his wins, but also just in general. He's a very calm driver. And if you look at Norris, and also in his post-race interviews, he really looked thrown off. He was, he was like, he was, I don't know, as if he wasn't really there in the moment and not really sharp. And yeah, this is I wonder how that's going to develop during the season, because I do think that, you know, in a normal situation, Norris would still have the edge on Piastri, but if it's really going to be close, I don't know how they perform under pressure separately, and in that sense I do have a bit more confidence in Oscar.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I agree with you, but at some point they will need to make a statement, you know, because you know what happened last year with Norris fighting maybe for the championship with Verstappen. I think they could have gone closer. They could have been closer at the end of the year with Norris and Verstappen. They didn't. Why? Because maybe they lacked of experience, maybe, of fighting for both championships. They nearly lose the constructors against Ferrari because some decisions they were making and some strategies they were making when they were on top of the grid. But also now is the fourth race. I don't think it's time for them to make a call and say, hey, you're driver one, you're driver two. But they have to start thinking about it, because when the European calendar begins, that's when the title can be decided. And yeah, we've seen Oscar Piastri performing under pressure in qualifying, and well, it was like a kind of hesitated. We see Oscar Piastri, I think the first time we saw him kind of hesitating was in the Australian Grand Prix when he did those mistakes during those weather conditions. But apart from that, we've seen an Oscar Piastri as a good contender, and also Lando Norris that needs to step up. Maybe the thing that McLaren still has in their mind is like, okay, Lando Norris is our experienced guy, is our like kind of what Charles Leclerc is for Ferrari, Lando Norris is for us, for McLaren, and they don't want Lando Norris to be second driver, you know, because they care a lot about him. But at some point, either Norris needs to step up and make a good statement in the next races, or Oscar Piastri deserves the first seat.
Well, all in all, I conclude there's still a lot to continue to watch the rest of the season. It's not all it's all not written in stone yet.
Very true. As we like to say, time will tell.
Time will tell.
Okay, so let's get into scores and results for this weekend. Anton, how many people played this weekend?
Yes, Sam, we are going to get into the scores. We had 8,549 players. And, you know, for the two of you to, you know, start guessing, because we're going to have a quiz later on, of course, I would first like to know how many people, and Sam, I'll let you go first. How many people do you think predicted this exact podium with Piastri on the top step, Russell on second, and Norris on third? Out of those 1,549 players, how many people got that right?
The first number that came to mind is 8.
I would say more. I would say more. I don't know. Out of 1,549, Piastri, Russell, Norris. It's not like a surprise, you know. Maybe the surprise is Norris being on P3, but obviously I think a lot of people, maybe they guessed Piastri in first, and maybe they expected Russell to be in those top positions. I would say around 43, I would say. More, a little bit more.
All right. Well, it's somewhat in the middle. It was 21, but that means Sam is just slightly closer. But both very good good guesses. Actually, interestingly, if we look at the podium on forecast, on the podium, it was only one person who predicted the podium right, only the winner. Actually, number two and three got on the podium without getting a correct podium prediction, but scoring a lot of points from P4 onward. And I would also tell you the average score that we had this weekend, which was actually 38.0 points. So pretty decent, I would say. Not too bad. And let's have a look to those who were actually on the podium. And actually, we had on the third step of the podium, friend of the show, Ajit.
That's right. And, you know, funny enough, I was with Ajit when he discovered that he finished third on the podium. So I was nice. Able to see physically how excited he was. And, you know, we obviously have over the years at this point have teased Ajit once in a while because he does like to go a little abstract at times with his picks. And he makes some very big sacrifices in terms of his results when he makes those choices. So look, congratulations to Ajit to see him on the podium. I think that he obviously did something right and it's worked in his favor. So he's coming, he's doing a lot better than you and I this year, Anton. So
yeah, that is right. Actually, I checked, I went back and he's the first Malaysian on the podium ever in forecast. So
wow. Good. Oh, he'll be happy to hear that.
Very good result. Actually,
congratulations, Ajit.
With he scored 73 points. So that is the score that you needed to get
on
the podium this
weekend.
Yeah. And on the second place, we had somebody scoring only half a point higher than that, 73.5. And that was Brian de Boer from the Netherlands. And that means we get to our first step on the podium. And actually, Sam, I've been thinking about this. And what we always do is we always play the national anthem of the person that wins the quiz. And, you know, I think we should still stick to that one this weekend. But in the future, I was thinking, you know, it would be more fair if we play the national anthem of the person that wins in forecast for that weekend.
I think that's a great idea.
You know, I
suppose think that is actually a great idea.
People might get tired a little bit of listening to the Canadian anthem or the South African one when we usually have Savannah.
Yeah, listen, I don't blame them.
But
they will not have a Spanish anthem because of me, because I'm not good at predicting, I believe. At least they try.
Well, we will see. And I you know, at this time, I still promised you that, you know, that is the prize for the winner of the quiz. So I think we should stick to that. But and actually, if we would have the national anthem of the winner in forecast, it would be a national anthem that some of you will recognize because we've played it a couple of times. We actually had a South African winner this weekend, and I'm just slightly stalling to pronounce his name because I know that this is probably going to be horribly wrong. At least his first name I'm going to get right. That's Divine. So his name is Divine Mfifu. He scored 76 points, which got him the win, 2.5 points more than Brian, who finished on second spot. Actually, what was very interesting, Sam, if you remember, in Japan, we had third place for Arnold Skrenovsky, who with that finished for the third time on the podium in forecast. We had somebody this time on P4 who had already been on the podium twice before as well. So actually, this feat would have been repeated if he would have gotten on the podium. But Ajit just just outscored him. But that was Francesco Tanti from Malta. Actually, talking about all these countries, I am going to ask you too, Sam, from which countries do you think we had most predictions come in for this weekend?
Well, I am going to stick with similarly to what we discussed last weekend. So I'm going to go with Spain. I'm also going to go with Mexico. And I'm going to stick to Kenya.
Those are indeed the three countries with the most predictions. Can you also put them in the right order? Or that was your order prediction?
No, let me change it. I'm going to say Kenya is number one.
That's right.
I'm going to say Mexico 2, and third being Spain.
All right. Well, it was almost correct. It was indeed Kenya first with 121 players, and we had Spain as second with 85 players, and Mexico with 81 players. So I don't know if all those Spanish players are your followers, but I guess a big chunk of them actually are, Nacho. So yeah, it's partly due to you.
Yeah, next time we'll be first. I will take care of that.
Okay, well, that's a good challenge.
I'm glad that the Spanish people join to these quizzes and predictions. That's fun. I think, we have a great community, and it's a fun game to do, you know? So it's not just watching cars and watching the race, but also, you know, saying, oh, I need this driver to overtake him so I can score more points. You know, that's better.
It's actually very interesting because a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, when we had a lot of growth in Forecast, there was actually a lot of Spanish people coming on board. And at that time, Alonso was doing quite well. And I think a lot of Spanish players got very low average scores for always putting Alonso on first. And I think a lot of you have now put them that a little bit behind them and you know, are actually making some somewhat more realistic predictions. And Alonso does feature a lot in the top 10, but he's not being predicted on the podium that much anymore. And that's actually very interesting. I think the same can be said, you know, for Mexico, where we had a lot of players from Mexico also last season, and with a lot of Checo predictions, you know, Checo winning a lot of races if it were for them. And actually in Kenya it's interesting because there's a lot of people that are that have come on from a lot of different chat groups, and there are definitely a couple of groups where, you know, they're most of these people are idolizing Hamilton. But there's actually also and I've been looking a little bit at this, like, from one country, like, you know, the average scores, of course, we also look at, but they're a little bit more difficult to track, because if you look purely at the average of a country, you're going to see that, you know, there's just one player from Kazakhstan who plays one time and gets a high score, and then that score will be forever unbeatable. But it's actually interesting to see also the average scores of different countries. So we'll definitely also on the Instagram later on during the season, when we have a little bit more data collected, we'll get to do some average score overviews as well, and see which countries are doing well, and usually those are not the countries with the most amount of players, so it's going to be an interesting one. Other than that, we had, looking at the total amount of countries, we had a player from a new country this weekend. We had somebody from Suriname who actually did play also last year. So Suriname is back on the board. And the country with the most places gained this weekend was Mauritania. And they gained 12 positions. I think they're now at 120 or something like that. But you'll find that also later on the Instagram. So all of these stats can be found during the stories throughout the week between the race weekends. And actually, talking a little bit about all of these points for the country, Sam, I got a quiz question for you. We were talking about bonus questions during our last podcast, so I've written one down.
Right.
How many points do you think that our P1 country has collected thus far? So that's Kenya, obviously. How many points after four races do you think Kenya has altogether?
Oh my goodness. And you said there was 126. How many
121
players
this weekend? So yeah,
I'm
that's
averaging.
Right. Yeah. No,
121.
I mean, I'll give you some time.
I have to do quick math here.
Yeah, okay,
Antoine.
Wait, look.
I mean,
I'm going to let you do that. In the meantime, I will announce the points or the winners for our collaboration. So I give you a little bit of time to work things out. So let's look at our winners of the pregame Motor Shop merchandise competition, where the podium all gets a voucher. And of course, there's more prizes to be won for players in that competition, because there's also prizes at the end of the season, but there's also prizes for those that are ahead during the summer break. And this week we had Ralf Pareño, who scored 57 points. He finished on P96 this weekend, but he's the highest classified player from the pregame Motor Shop competition. And on P2, actually a shared P2 for Lucy Inalves and Rowan Liserio, who both scored 53.8 points. So they are all the lucky winners of vouchers. Well, I'm calling it lucky, but, you know, well-deserved. And we also look at our DRS lane. collaboration with the DRS Lane, an F1 motor shop, sorry, an F1 merchandise shop in Lebanon. And there we have on the top step Anthony El Chadrawi, who actually also won the $10 voucher during the Chinese weekend. So Anthony has been on a roll, and he actually finished P16 overall during this weekend, scoring 64.5 points. So so Sam, that brings us back to you. How many points does Kenya have?
All right, I did some hopefully quick math. I am going to say 11,500.
Yeah, that's not a bad guess. It's within the range of a couple of thousand. It's 17,035 points. So even quite a bit more than that. Yeah, and
I was trying to be very modest because you had mentioned earlier about the different point differences and depending on the volume of players per country. So I was trying to be quite modest, but 17,000. Wow.
Yeah.
Big number.
Yeah, indeed a big number. They're already quite a bit ahead of B2 and P3 because actually Spain is in P2 with 13,673 points. So yeah, they already created quite a big gap. And I also wanted to mention before I forget, I wanted to look a little bit at the high scores. So the scores overall were not that high this weekend. So we have nobody who's entering the worldwide high scores, but there are a couple of high scores that were set for the continent. So we have Divine Mfufu who finished first this weekend, and he is now on P5 in the African high scores, and also on P8 from this weekend from Kenya, Issa Sigu with 72 points scored. So he actually finished P5 for the whole weekend, and with that is on P8 in the high scores. And in Oceania, we have three people entering the high scores. That's Jason Binding, who finished on P7 from Australia, finishing P7 this weekend, but on P6 in the high scores for that continent. Adam Finn enters on P10 from New Zealand, and we have Teresa from Samoa actually entering at P19 with 55 points scored. So and before I actually forget, the last person I should also mention in the Asian high scores is Ajit, who is now on P13 with his 73 points scored this weekend. So those are the new entries for the high scores, which means that I wanted to say actually that we should go to our scores, but before that we should also have a look at the overall competition. So let's have a quick look, and let's look at who was on P3 ahead of this weekend. That was William Kaguna. He scored 37.8 points, and with that drops from P3 to P9. Kashish Aman from India scored 29.3 and drops even further to P15. And we had on P1 your fellow countryman, Sam. That was Jack Wood, who also scored 37.8, just like William Kaguna. And unfortunately, Jack is no longer on P1. He drops to P2, so he's still on the first three spots. But he unfortunately has to leave the lead to somebody from Mexico, Cesar Murataya, who scored 65.3 points this weekend and moves up from P9 to that first spot. So we now have a Mexican leader for the competition, and that leaves us only to mention who is on the third step, and that is Jordi Schonewille from the Netherlands, moving up from P11 to P3, scoring 50.5 points for the weekend. So we have a podium now: Mexico, Canada, Netherlands.
Wow, very nice.
Means we got to talk about your score, Sam. And who did you put on the podium for this weekend?
I went with a similar prediction as last weekend, and I don't believe it served me well yet again. But I went with Norris, Piastri, and Verstappen.
That's right. Actually, we went with the same very podium, Sam. The only difference I would like to point out is that you were clever enough to put Leclerc on P4 after that. So that was a correct prediction, which got you 12 points, which redeemed some of your points because you scored 37 and you did outscore me. So you finished P692 this weekend. And I don't know if you recall Ouch. Where you were in the standings after Japan.
I'm fairly certain I was in the twos, was I not?
You were almost in the twos. You were 302. Well, there is a two in that, but yeah, unfortunately, you dropped...
Close enough, huh?
Yeah, you're dropping 99 spots in the championship, so you're now on P401.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I should have learned last weekend, and clearly I did not, so now I'm paying the price, but... We have yet again another race next weekend, so and it is an interesting one. A lot can happen there, so yeah, I might have to do something different.
Yeah, but you're right, not a lot of time to mourn. Nacho, actually, you outscored both of us this weekend because you went with an interesting podium. Do you remember what you put?
Yeah, I put Piastri, Norris, Leclerc, if I'm not wrong.
That's right.
And that was nearly nice. That was nearly it. I always put Ferrari in front of Mercedes, and that's a mistake I always do. But, you know, like, sometimes my heart says that Ferrari will win or will be in the podium places, you know, even though my head says no. But, yeah, and I also put Verstappen there in between because I thought he was going to outperform his car again. But he didn't. We didn't see any, you know, magic thing from Verstappen this weekend. Everything went wrong for the Red Bull team. And I placed Tsunoda as well in podium on points as well. Because I thought he was gonna do good here.
Yeah, that's right. And you scored a total of 51.5 points. And that got you to place 257 in the weekend. So definitely not too bad. And that was a very good decision to go with Piastri on P1. We're going to see later in the quiz how many others did that too. But you're actually going up in the ranking by quite a bit because you were P571 ahead of this weekend. And you're moving up all the way to P365. So you passed Sam. That was a good comeback because if I remember correctly, last weekend you scored very, very low. Is that correct?
I think it is. I'm rechecking again from the Japanese Grand Prix. Yeah, it was 21.5.
I recall. Nothing, yeah. It's not even that bad, actually, the 21.5. I just recall that in your own sub-league, you were last from all the people that you were competing with. But I'm pretty sure that's not the case this time. But
I hope not. Or if I'm the last one, it means that my mates are doing better, and that's good.
that's a good way to look at it. Let's also look at Savannah's points. Savannah's not on the podcast with us now, but I will read out her podium prediction, which was Norris, Piastri, Russell. Not too bad. Scored 44.8 points. Yeah, it's I guess, you know,
that's actually very close.
It's not the Yeah, none of them are right, but they're the right people.
No, but that's still
that is very good.
Right podium, yeah. Just wrong placement.
That got her to P471 this weekend, and she moves up from P719 to P712. So, I double checked that that's not her sister's score, but that's her actual score because I keep getting that wrong. But
very nice.
With that, we move to my score, but I'll get that over with very quickly. I went with Norris, Piastri, Verstappen, as we have established, similar as Sam, but I scored only 27.3 points. So I was P1,252. I think that's the lowest I've ever finished. And I move from this is even embarrassing. I don't want to read this out loud, but I move from P491 to P921. I'm almost past P1000. This is insane. I would like to move on to the quiz straight away if we can.
Well, as an owner, you can say that you won everybody ahead, so you know, you're not cheating and stuff.
True, exactly. I've actually, because that's a very good if I would be cheating, I would obviously be winning this thing, and I'm obviously not winning it, so that's a good perspective. But let's move to the quiz. And just for those that are not aware of what we exactly do, so we're gonna go past the all the point scoring positions, and we're going to see how many people in the game had all of these people predicted in the correct spot. So just to start off with P1, and it's Sam that's going to go first, because Sam was closer to the amount of people that correctly predicted the podium. And Sam is going to guess out of the 1,549 players, and we already established that Nacho is one of those that had Piastri correctly predicted on P1. How many other people had Piastri on P1, Sam? What do you think?
I'm going to go with a pretty high number. I'm going to say 450.
I was going to say nearly 1,000, because I think McLaren is also always strong, and I think Piastri has proven things, at least in the FP1 when we... Yeah, he was in FP1. I was doubting if it was him or just like a rookie for McLaren. I think McLaren was the only team that didn't have a rookie.
Yeah,
for
they
the
did.
FP1.
Yeah, they were one of the few that didn't. Yeah.
I was gonna say nearly 1,000 that got Piastri. I'm pretty confident that people voted for Piastri.
So is that, we're gonna write down 1,000 exactly?
I wrote it 1,000. 33. Let's see if the 33 comes now. But yeah, you can see 1,000. I just, you know, just numbers. 33.
it is just numbers. And Sam's number was extremely close to the right answer, Sam. I congratulate you, because you're only 5 off.
Really?
Yeah. It was 455 people that had Piastri on P1.
Wow.
Ooh, I thought more people were going to...
Very cool.
We're gonna vote on Piastri.
Yeah, there's still I think more people that expect Norris to win it. So I think there's on average always about, well, not always, but there's these weekends there's about half of the people go with a Norris win. But we do need to establish that Sam has a little bit more experience with this quiz. So. But you know, I mean, experience doesn't say experience. We just established with Norris and Piastri as well. You know, it's also about pressure. So, so let's see if Nacho, you have more luck with P2 Norris. How many people put Norris on? P2 Norris. I don't know what's happening to me. It was of course Russell that finished on P2. So how many people predicted that?
Well, I would say according to those numbers, and according to, because obviously my numbers were a little bit higher. I have to dab now. I think Russell, he was not supposed to be in P2. Most people, maybe they put them in fifth or maybe third as maximum. I would say around 250.
Okay, I'm going to go with... 250 is pretty good. I'm going to go slightly lower and say 187.
Means there's a second point on the board for you, Sam. It was actually quite a bit lower than both of that. It was only 46 people who went with Russell on P2. Surprisingly low, I would say.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that is a little surprising.
It is. Knowing that, you know, Mercedes was stepping in this Grand Prix and Russell is always there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he has been on the podium twice before already in the season. So altogether, I would have probably also guessed slightly north from that. Sam... We move to Norris now. I confused him with Russell, but Norris finished third. And how many people put him on third in forecast?
I'm going to say 375.
I'm saying 375. I would say 270. I think more people have put Norris either P1 or P2.
That's the first point on your count, Nacho, because it was 192. So you're improving. It's 2-1. We're going to Leclerc on P4. We already established that Sam was one of those people that had Leclerc on P4. Nacho, how many people with Sam went with that?
So Leclerc P4 is like a... I think it's an average position for Leclerc. So out of those 1,500, I would say nearly 600.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the twos, and I'm going to say 289.
289 means, well, it's still 103 people more than that, but it does mean you're closer. It was 392 people that had Leclerc on P4.
Interesting. Okay.
Which brings us to the second Ferrari on the board, which was Hamilton on P5, Sam.
Hamilton P5. Let's go with, I don't know why, but I'm going to say 55. It's just the first number that came to my mind.
You should have said 44.
I know, that's right. That would have made more sense, at least.
I'm saying 144.
144. All right. That means it's 3-2. That one's for you, Nacho, because there was 227 people that went with Hamilton on P5, which brings us to Max Verstappen on P6, Nacho.
Max Verstappen on P6, I must say, I don't know why the first number that came to my mind was 91, so I'm going to stick on 91.
Okay, I'm going to go with 62.
Well, I thought you guys were going to stick to racing numbers. If you would have gone with the 33, you would have been very, very close because it was 35. But the 62 is closer to the 35 than the 91. So, yeah, quite a low number. And that means we go to Gasly. Of course, we didn't mention that, but I think it was on the last lap where Verstappen overtook Gasly, who almost finished sixth. But finished seventh, and how many people went with Gasly on P7 there, Sam? I think this is an interesting one.
I'm gonna say 2.
I'm gonna say 4, and those 4 are Piastri's dad, Piastri's mom, and Piastri's sister, and himself. I don't think anybody voted for Gasly on points, so.
Well, just I gotta say that actually, if I would be guessing and Sam went with 2, I would have gone with 1 because I don't think that this is something that, you know, I always look at it like how big is the chance that I would put him there, and I would never have put him there. But actually going over Sam's number was the good direction because it was, and really I double checked this one because I couldn't believe my eyes, but there was 20 people who went with Gasly on P7.
Wow, is surprising, that but is also really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know, but Gasly might have a big family.
Yeah, maybe. His cousins voted.
Yeah.
That was more than expected, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't expect 20 people, which brings us to Ocon on P8, and that one is for Nacho first.
Well, Ocon in P8, you know, like, I have the feeling that in P8, the surprising drivers can start to appear, you know? So I'm saying Ocon is higher than Gasly, obviously, because I think Haas is performing better than Alpine. So I would say, I would say 30 people. Actually, 25. I'm changing to 25.
Okay. I'm going to say 16.
Okay. Well, Nacho, I do completely agree with your reasoning. The point's going to go to Sam, though, but I do agree with you. I mean, I would have also said that, you know, if 20 people go with Gasly on P7, there must be more people with Ocon on P8, but that's not the case. There was only 14 people with Ocon on P8, so I would have lost this one as well from Sam. Sam, you were only 2 away from the right answer. You're actually getting good at this, and means you can also guess the next one.
I love how you say you're actually getting good at
because
this.
You know, I've been making jokes.
It's only taken
3 years.
Yeah,
exactly. And I do believe you're actually quite good at it. So tell me then, to know that on P9, how many people went with that?
I'm gonna give a big number here. I'm gonna go with 197.
Okay, well, Nacho, to at least get to a tie, you need to get this one and the next one right because it's 5-3. It's still in your own hands though. And if it does end up in a tie, I have written down 2 bonus questions. So
okay, perfect. I was gonna say.
No, we don't do ties in forecast.
I don't think soon. I mean, people can start to think that Tsunoda is, you know, getting to know the car, but at the same point, maybe Tsunoda, they're saying that Tsunoda struggles and they don't see him very confident, as far as we saw in Japan. So what was your number again, Sam?
I believe I went with 197.
Yeah, that's what I have written down indeed.
Yeah. I was going to say...
You can read it, Anton. That's amazing.
I can. The seven's a bit dodgy, but I can still read it.
I'm saying, look, I'm sticking with the numbers, the driver numbers. I'm saying 222.
All right. That means you do get a point back at Sam. So it is 5-4. It was 237. So you're actually getting quite close to the right answer, only 15 away.
Close.
So that means... it's all about this one. It's Beerman on P10. How many people went with that, Nacho? Please let me read out loud the bonus points, because the bonus questions, because I kind of like them.
I must say 87. Don't tell me why.
Oh, this is actually going to be a tough one, I think. And I believe, because if you were to look before Suzuka, I think the number would be a lot less, but I think based on Behrman and the most recent race leading up to Bahrain, I think that I'm assuming that the number of people that picked him in the 10th spot actually would have increased quite a bit. With that being said, I am gonna go with 89.
And that's indeed the right direction to go. Actually, it was a lot more. It was 224 people that went with Behrman on P10.
Ooh.
Yeah,
wow.
quite a lot. So that means Sam that you win the quiz, and it ended 6-4, but it was pretty close. Especially for
close call, for, close
yeah,
one
for first time playing Nacho, so a very decent result. Actually, I think Sam, didn't we establish last time that I was going to make bonus questions, and then even if it ends with a win for someone, we were still going to do the bonus questions just for fun's sake, or not?
I believe we did. We did establish that,
right? Because otherwise, I've written down for nothing. I don't want that to be the case. So I am going to ask both of you. Actually, I've written down two bonus questions. In case you get the first, you know, in case you draw on the first bonus question. So the first would have been let's say there's, I guess we can establish somewhat that there's four top teams. Which driver out of the top four teams was not picked by anybody this weekend for a win?
Which driver out of the top four teams?
Which driver out of the top four was picked?
Was not picked for a win. So out of everybody predicting and looking at who predicted the drivers to win this Grand Prix, out of the four top teams, so let's say McLaren, Red Bull, Mercedes and Ferrari, which of the eight drivers from those teams was not picked by anybody for a win?
Yeah. For me, it comes down to two drivers. And so it's going to be difficult to pick between which one. I'm going to go with either Kimi or Tsunoda. So... oh, it's so tough because I know I'm going to go with Tsunoda.
Yeah, I think I would have gone as well for Tsunoda, but just to change it, I think Kimi, right? Like it's either Kimi and Tsunoda. I don't think people didn't pick Russell or Hamilton or Leclerc.
Right. It was going to be one of those, but I think there's a lot of I was going to say just now there's a lot of Antonelli fans. I do think there's also quite a lot of Tsunoda fans, but it was indeed Tsunoda who was not picked by anybody this weekend for a win. I think that was because last weekend in Japan he was picked by a couple of people for the win. That has decreased a bit. So if you were both going to go with Tsunoda, then I had written down another bonus question, which was which driver that is not in one of the four top teams was chosen as P1. And I'm going to give a hint. There's actually, it's not really much of a hint that is useful, but it was actually only one driver picked by one person. So it's actually also interesting how serious everyone takes forecast, because we only get, you know, seven drivers out of the eight drivers that are driving for top teams that are being picked for P1. And there's only out of 1,549 players, there's only, you know, one person that goes. Actually, this person also finished last this weekend with 2 points on the board, so not a whole lot. It was a bit of a joker prediction, I guess. So yeah, the
I'm
question
saying,
is
I'm saying that guy must be Spanish, and he must put Alonso there.
It's so funny because that was the first. That was the first person I thought of as well, was that it had to have been an Alonso prediction.
But actually it wasn't. I will tell you, I will give you that.
I'm not going to go with Alonso. I'm going to choose somebody else. It's tough because there's so many to choose from, because regardless, I don't know. I think it's a lot more harder to choose this one than it was the other question, mm-hmm. but I'm just going to say Isaac Hadjar, because he's become quite a fan favorite, so that maybe somebody chose him to win.
It was not Hadjar.
I was thinking about it was Alonso or Albon, but
I was know. Okay, who is the least likely to win? Let's ask it that way.
Oh, I feel bad for that's a tough one.
I hope he doesn't hear us.
You're right. I feel bad. It's actually tough because I actually think that's a difficult question to ask, because I mean, Kik Sauber isn't having a great start to the season, are they? Yeah. So I would automatically go there, but then at the same time, I mean, Aston Martin isn't. Stroll hasn't been doing so well in the last few races. So
yeah, I would say Stroll or Bortoleto. That was my...
Yeah, that...
No, actually...
All right, you pick one, I'll pick the other.
this person went with a Doohan win.
No way.
I got to say, it's a bit of a joker prediction, like I was saying. I mean, we sometimes have a couple of people that just go with something completely random. This person went with a prediction of P1 Doohan, P2 Hülkenberg, P3 Hadjar, Lawson, Albon, Antonelli, Sainz, Leclerc, Ocon, Russell. So yeah, that was not that got him that got him very very little points. Actually, got him 2 points for Ocon.
Well, if he wins everything, he knows that he's the only one scoring. So.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's definitely
fair
true.
Point.
Yeah, but he got.
I feel bad for Jack. He hasn't had this season. I mean, he hasn't had a very great introduction into Formula One. He's just been struck with, in some cases, unfortunate luck. But hopefully, I mean, I think this weekend he can walk away with a much better result. And maybe, you never know, next week someone puts him in their top 10, but it's not a joker prediction.
Yeah, and there you mentioned next week. And as we are in the middle, right in the middle of a triple header, we only have a week to go to Saudi Arabia. And what are you guys looking forward to on that weekend? What are the things to watch out for? What are you expecting? How are you approaching your forecast predictions? Nacho, what's your what's going to be your take on this one?
My take on Saudi Arabia could be similar to Bahrain, because I think McLaren can make another impact with 1-2 or at least the podium places. I would say Ferrari has always been performing good in Saudi Arabia, so they can take a step forward. I think they implemented the new floor for Bahrain, and only Leclerc got used to it. Let's see if Hamilton, that he also did good races in Saudi Arabia, can perform good as well. And it would be like a tough, absolutely like a tough qualifying, because Saudi Arabia is like a good circuit for qualifying. We saw really good laps. Well, the non-pole position lap from Max Verstappen in 2021. So we will see maybe some things unexpected. I think it's the first circuit that we will see some unexpected things, because the wall is so close to the track, and just one little mistake, you're in the wall, you're having an incident. So we'll see. At least the top five will. I have it very clear, but from there to the P10, I will have to think about it, because everything can change.
Is Alonso going to score his first points for the season?
Well, if he wants to score, he has to let me know that I have to release him from my fantasy and from everything, because every time I put him, he just underperforms.
Well, look, Nacho, I will say this. You might be happy to know that my group name on our Forecast One app is called Alonso's Retirement Plan. I definitely love Alonso as well, and it would be really nice to see him crack the top 10 this mm-hmm. weekend coming up, but I'm not so confident considering the track, but you never know.
Is he the only driver that hasn't scored, or is him and Bortoleto?
No, and Doohan as well.
And Doohan,
and Sainz actually as well. We haven't had any Spanish points yet on the board.
I think Sainz scored.
This would have been the weekend
in Chinese
for
Grand
Prix. Too.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because of all the
Of the disqualifying.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Sorry, mm-hmm. I missed that one. So I take that back. Sorry, Spain. but yeah, then it's just the ones that we just mentioned. Well, yeah, I unfortunately I don't really see the Aston Martin doing that well in Jeddah, but you never know. I mean, we've seen a couple of surprises too. I mean, in the first weekend it looked like Haas was nowhere, and then all of a sudden they started scoring points every weekend, and actually, you know, Aston Martin and Stroll had two good first races of the season, and then two races that were not so good. So yeah, it is actually going back and forth a little bit, and it does seem to be pretty track specific. But I do agree that qualifying is going to be very important. I think we've seen very clearly during these first four weekends that driving in clear air makes all the difference, makes a huge difference. We saw it again today. So qualifying will be a very important session for Jeddah, and a very exciting one, like you're saying. I mean, it's a very fast track. It's going to be an exciting Saturday, I feel. So looking forward to that one very, very much. And before we end and listen to the Canadian anthem, and I think we're still going to play it this time, but I would suggest that from next time onward we are going to play the anthem of the person that wins. I'm just thinking along ahead, and we only need to figure out what we're going to do when two people win it, when we have a joint winner. Are we going to play two anthems? Which one are we going to play first? What are we going to do if 10 people finish on the first spot? Are we going to play 10 anthems? These are questions to think about. But before mm-hmm. we end it,
we'll have to cross that bridge when we get there.
Yeah, exactly. But before
we can do a remix.
That would be nice, actually. Yeah, that would be nice. Well, if we reach that point, I'll need to find somebody that can actually make that remix. So Nacho, if you're up for it, we can maybe work out something. But I was going to say before we move to the anthem, just wanted to say that and mostly, well, not just for Spanish speaking, but I would say for all of the Forecast fans, I would definitely, and I will put in the show notes also the handle of your Instagram and of your TikTok, Nacho. So I would definitely suggest for any Spanish speakers, or for any, well, for whichever language you speak. I mean, it's fun to follow, you know, nice Instagram accounts that frequently post material that is actually nice to watch, and it's a good combination of memes and also some more serious notes, and you do some reviews, and I guess, you know, all with a smile, but all in all, a very good platform to get some of your F1 content. So definitely follow FaustNacho.F1, if I'm not mistaken. That's the correct handle for the Instagram. I don't know if the TikTok one is exactly the same.
The TikTok is FaustNacho by itself. Instagram is FaustNacho.F1. If you search FaustNacho, only FaustNacho on Instagram, it will appear my personal profile. But you can follow me also with my, you know, soccer career or football career,
right?
Here in the US we say soccer, but yeah,
very nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's just to spell it out, because people might spell Nacho with CH, but it's actually spelled with TX, so it's FaustNacho, and then .f1 for the Instagram, and then it will come up on your screen when you write that And
you can just search Mama Mazepin and that little guy that looks get to like that Ricciardo. Way. That's me.
I was gonna say that. I mean, that was that took me a while to figure out that it was actually your face below the Renault cap of Danny Rick. That is I mean, the it's really canny how much you look like Danny Rick.
They told me that when I went to the Spanish Grand Prix this summer. The first picture I took in, you know, in the fan zone, I think it was like a couple of, you know, supporters, fans from Italy. They started to scream, Daniel Ricciardo or Nico Hülkenberg, and they were looking at me and pointing at me.
No way.
And I had to, you know, I had to buy a Visa Cash App Red Bull t-shirt, you know, because... There was the fake Hamilton. You remember there was a fake Hamilton?
Yeah.
Let me be the fake Ricciardo, you know?
That's awesome. Why not?
Yeah, well, it's been a nice having you coming on the podcast, and I'm sure we will give you a chance at some point to get back at Sam at the quiz and actually win one. So, until then.
Of course.
And, for all the rest of the listeners, until the episode after the Saudi Grand Prix, and hopefully we have a lot to talk about again.
I see you laugh a little bit when you say that.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity as well to be in this podcast, and looking forward for the revenge.
That's right. I can't wait. And it's been a pleasure, Nacho.
Pleasure's mine.
Cheers.